Hi, and welcome to The Art of Relating, installment number 10. This is going to be consensus part 2. We gave part 1 last week, but I'll review that briefly, and then we'll move into part 2 to complete the presentation on dyad and group consensus. This is Zach Schwartz, your host. We are not doing therapy and counseling on the radio, even though I am a psychologist. This is about learning a set of skills we call effective humanistic interaction training, taking the concepts and skills and integrating that into how we actually act with each other moment to moment, which is a long process, much easier than just understanding it and internalizing it, getting us into our brains so we can learn it. Don't forget to call in your questions and comments to zach@kepw.org, and don't forget to check the website at dynskills, that's dyneskills.com, for books, training, workshops, podcasts of this radio program, and other pieces of data that will help you to internalize and integrate. And that's the important part. Get it into how we act, the concepts and skills that we're describing here. Now, before we return to consensus decision making, we did part 1 last week. I think ground comes first. Always ground before process or content. So get a solid bottom half, feet on the ground, toes pointed forward, unlock your knees and hips. That's your base. That's what attaches you to the ground. And get your top half relaxed, but hold a shape that says I'm worth something, that says I'm open, that says I have choices, that says I'm valuable. Get in that posture that you know well if you're practicing. That is your grounded stance. Take 2 or 3 grounding breaths. Remember, deep in both chambers, stomach and chest. Let it all go. 1 more. Let it all go. And then shake out the kinks. Make sure the places that you normally hold tight are not tight as best you can. And then remember your self-talk, which is 2 relaxers, 2 affirmers, and 2 unhookers. So chill out, calm down, by example. Or, I have value, I'm doing the best I can, I love myself, 2 of those. And finally, make it all small. Become that part of your awareness that's 14 billion years old, the part of you that's light. Unhook. It's not worth it. Stay in this moment. No big deal. Whatever words make sense to you to unhook, step out of the ego movie and just be here now, as Ram Dass used to say. Okay, then, let's talk more about consensus. Last week, we were talking about dyad consensus, which is consensus between 2 people, and the same applies to larger groups. The form is the same. So we started out with the right to an issue, putting an agenda item up and having it dealt with in a relationship of equals. You have the obligation to listen to someone else's issues and or set a time with them to discuss those issues. That's mutually acceptable, but you have an agenda item. And the second part was ground, of course. And the third part was, what's the question on the floor? The person who put the item on the agenda gets to describe, hopefully in question form, the item. So what do we do about the monthly budget? Or what do we do about choosing the kid's school or doctor? Or whatever the issue may be, big or small, that varies from person to person and item to item, but identifying the question. And then you're trading worlds. Again, this is a summary of installment number 9, consensus part 1. So listening to each other, validating, empathizing, understanding, caring, until we both people involved in the consensus have a good feeling that they understand themselves, that they understand the other person. So again, if you think of it like a baseball diamond, top of the diamond is what's the question? First and third base, the sides of the diamond are the two worlds that are being described to each other about that question. And remember not to argue. Don't want to have who's right fights. Don't want to have you're not listening to me fights. Keep your sharing subjective. When someone feels unheard, feed them a reflection, the map you made of what they said to see if it's right. If they don't think so, they get to go again. Understand each other's worlds at that, about that question. Once you have that, and that's where we ended off last week, you want to then move to what I would call home plate in the baseball metaphor, which is what we call proposals. And a proposal is a possible answer to the question on the floor that meets the criteria for a proposal, which is, one, it has to answer adequately the question. Two, it has to be doable with the resources available, at least vaguely as much. So it will answer the question and we can do it. And three, it pays respect to both worlds that were shared, so that each person says they understand their proposal, that it can be done, and that both people feel like their needs and their perceptions were respected in developing that proposal. You're looking for that together, the two people. They're not being enemies. They're not trying to win. They're not trying to get their way. They're just seeking together a solution that respects and cares about both of them, regardless of how different their worlds may be, and answers the question and is doable with the resources on hand. Now, once we have a proposal that meets those criteria, we then need to move to a step I call the plan, the nuts and bolts of how it's going to get done. Because I early in my life learned that when we worked by consensus, we would reach great proposals that everybody agreed to answer a question, but we'd come back the next week and nothing happened to enact that proposal. So without a plan, the best proposal in the world will tend not to produce any result. So once we have a proposal that respects the worlds and that answers the question and that's doable, we then need a plan. The plan says, how are we going to operationalize the proposal? How are we going to make it happen? If, for example, the proposal was to run a flag on the front of a building on the 4th of July, the plan is, okay, where's the money coming from? Who's getting the flag? Who's getting the ladder? Who's going to help put it up? When is all this going to happen? When should we check back to make sure it happened or solve any problems? And who's buck stopping it? That means who's going to take the responsibility to make sure the plan is enacted. It's nice to have somebody represent the plan, what we call a buck stopper, so that that person can report back and either make sure it happened or report why it didn't. But the plan helps makes it real. Once we have a plan, so we've got the question and we've got the worlds and we've got a proposal and we've got a plan. And sometimes this takes, you know, 5 or 6 minutes to do the whole thing. And sometimes it takes hours or days or multiple meetings, depending on the question on the floor. But once we have a plan and someone's buck-stopping that plan, the next thing, we're almost done, is to summarize. Here was the question on the floor. Here is the proposal to answer the question. Here is the plan and how we're going to do it. Do both people, if it's dyad consensus, understand those pieces and agree with those pieces? And if they do, great, then we're in business, let's do it. If they don't, then we have to go back and make amendments and repeat that part. Now, sometimes amendments are, say, in the plan. So someone says, well, I don't have a truck to carry the flagpole, so I can't get the flag to the site because I don't have a vehicle, something like that. And we can work out the nuts and bolts of making an amendment at the plan level. Sometimes someone says, well, I don't feel respected or heard. What was my world about around doing this, and what did I get for my part? So we go back and make an amendment or a change there. Or sometimes someone says, I don't think we were discussing the right question. So the question on the floor, everybody might groan that's involved, but okay, what's the question on the floor? We can go back and go through the whole process again with a new question if we need to, and especially check with the person who brought the agenda item in the first place to ask them if they understand the proposal on the plan and they got what they needed, so that this issue can get resolved. And don't forget the part about checkbacks. So the next time we meet, or the last thing you say is, when should we check in against about this? You know, should we check in tomorrow night, or whatever makes sense in terms of the proposal to make sure it's happening and to solve any problems in carrying it out. So I believe that consensus is a great thing. It's much better than one person being the boss. It's much better than voting systems, I think, but it involves a real evolution in the habits of how you communicate and how you think about couple or group process. It is about balancing assertion and consideration in a way that doesn't require a boss. You have to really push yourself. I had to push myself to think about developing solutions based on group wisdom, which I find usually stronger and wiser than what any one person thinks, and not getting into power trips. How do I assert myself and be considerate without being in charge, without convincing anybody, without having to get my way? It changes a lot of things to think horizontally about how we interact. Now, power is not always purely horizontal. For example, a family, parents and children, can function by consensus very often, like on a question of which ice cream shop do we go to or which movie do we see. But there are certain things that parents are liable about or responsible for, and the children are not, because they're minors and they're dependents. And so when a family sits down to form a decision by consensus, I suggest that they define what parts of this decision are horizontal and what parts are vertical. Like, for example, safety issues might be vertical. The parents will decide what's safe enough in terms of which rides we ride at the county fair, or in terms of how we should travel in the car. The parents might decide budget questions. So do we have the money? Can we spend the money? Where do we get the money from for this decision? Also, maybe somewhat vertical. Let's say the two parents who find a consensus on that part as equals don't include the children in that particular part. They let them know what those boundaries and limits are via the power they have as parents. A large group can function by consensus, but when it gets so a lot more than 20, 25 people, one thing I suggest is that they break the group somehow into small groups, could be dyads or three or four or five or six, doesn't matter, and they can together in small groups separately form a consensus proposal and plan about a question. So once the larger group identifies the question on the floor, they can split into smaller groups, share worlds in the smaller groups, develop proposals, develop plans, and then when that's complete, they can re-meet each with a representative of their small group, bringing that small group's consensus to the meeting of the representatives. And the meeting of the representatives is about forming a consensus amongst those proposals and plans to answer the question. that can then, at the end of that process, be brought back to and described to the larger group for summary, for amendments, for redoing part of the process if necessary. So working with representatives from small groups can allow consensus to work even in a very large group. Now, the goal in consensus functioning is that each person in the group or dyad understands consensus and how it works so that they can help mediate the process, make points of order, which is about process. And remember, process is more important than content for having a good life or a good day or a good meeting. People need to listen and care and validate and respect each other in that meeting. And so if everybody knows how consensus works, and when you bring in a new person, describing or training them in the concepts and skills of consensus so that they can start to contribute, anybody in the room can stop the meeting, pause for a point of order, correct the process. But it's good in most cases to have a mediator. In a dyad consensus in a couple, each of the people has to understand consensus enough, because mostly they're mediating themselves through the process. But in a larger group, it's good to have a mediator who can notice various things that could get in the way of a healthy process. Like, one thing a mediator might notice is that someone or more than one are not sharing their realities about the question. Now, that's important, because if people don't share their realities about the question, they can't get the respect they want. They won't have the same energy, motivation for carrying out the plan, and they're not being included in the group wisdom because they haven't shared. So a mediator can call on them and say, please share your thoughts and feelings about this question so we can include you in developing the solution. Now, if you've been quiet because your reality, your perceptions about the question have already been shared by someone else, you need not repeat all that. All you have to do is say, like she said, or like he said, or my views and feelings go this way, and it's already been described, so I'm already feeling included. That's great. Or other people say, well, I feel shy, or I feel intimidated, for various reasons I didn't share, and the mediator in the group tries to make it easier for them to do so. Now, when I'm working with a couple, a common complication in this process is that one of the people in the couple that feels less powerful or more dependent doesn't share their world so well because they're afraid it won't be respected, or because they're afraid to assert themselves for some other reason to say what they really feel or think. So it's hard for them to share. Try and slow down, try and listen, try to encourage them to share what they're thinking, share what they're feeling, give that value, give that validation. Another thing a mediator might notice in a consensus process is that either someone's not included in the plan of carrying out the proposal, or they don't seem clear that they have this job, so they might want to review the plan and say, remember, John, that you're doing this part, or Margaret, that you're doing that part, and making sure everyone knows what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to connect, and by when. The more specific the mediator is and the group is about who's doing what and by when, the more likely it is that the plan will succeed and that the proposal will be carried out and that the question will be answered. There's no abstaining in consensus, is the way the expression goes, meaning we want everyone to be involved in understanding the question, understanding the solution, and understanding the plan. So anyone says, oh, I don't care, they can, well, empower the rest of the group to make the decision, but that's not quite as strong as everybody getting involved. Now, you can't force that to happen, but you can encourage that to happen and try and get people who are not involved but are part of the group to be involved in what the solution is. On the other hand, it is possible to give what I call proxy to say to the other person, I don't care a lot about this, and you can go any way you want, and I will live with your decision. Just be careful that that's sincere and that's really how they feel, because sometimes people will say, do it any way you want. And what they mean is they don't want to argue, they don't want to assert themselves, they don't want to go through this process with you for some reason. And that's not the same as a clean proxy where I say, I really don't care. Like dealing with my wife about which kind of lace to use on the window curtains. I think they're pretty. I like the lace in the curtains. But I really don't have any opinion, I really don't, about which kind of particular lace we use in the curtains. So I give proxy. I say, pick any lace, maybe within this price range. We can talk about what that range should be, or and go for it. I totally agree we should have curtains, and what kind of lace we use in the curtains is completely up to you. That's sincere, and I mean it. And that's what, if you were mediating, you'd want to check for to make sure that's where they're really at. And then proxy can be okay. Oh, notice and consider that this art of relating, this dyad consensus model, also works when I am talking to myself. In other words, even if the group is just Zach, human beings are ambivalent about most things, which means there's lots of parts of me. There's a little kid part of me, there's a psychologist part of me, there's a parent part of me, there's a teenage part of me. They all exist as what I would call slices of my ego, and they're all a little different from each other. So on any given issue, I might feel some ambivalence. Two parts of me don't agree about how to proceed. So someone says, would you like a cookie? And I say, yes, no, maybe, I don't know, how much time do I have? Because part of me wants the cookie because they taste good and I appreciate the gift from a friend. And another part of me doesn't want the cookie because they're fattening or because I'm diabetic and I have to watch my sugars or it's not my favorite flavor, whatever. I can feel different ways about almost anything. Ambivalence is very common. So I can run a process inside myself similar to the consensus process that we just shared for groups of two or more. What's the question on the floor? In this case, do I accept this cookie and eat it? And what do the various parts of me, one at a time, have to say about this? How do I feel? What do I think? You know, how many calories can I afford today? Or is it my favorite flavor? Or is it a challenge for my diabetes? Whatever. So I have to listen to those various sides of myself. And given all those opinions and all those feelings inside of me, I then have to try and come up with a consensus proposal. So maybe I come back to the person and say, I can take a quarter of one cookie. Or maybe, yes, I can have one. Or maybe I'm going to pass this time with the following qualifications. So once I have a consensus within myself, I'm not conflicted anymore. That's one way of resolving internal conflicts, is to apply this consensus model to myself and imagine a conversation or an interaction between different parts of me. And again, respecting all parts, caring about all parts, validating all parts, I come up with a proposal and a plan for almost any question. Now, if it's about the cookie, maybe the whole process takes a few seconds. But if it's about something larger or more complicated, it could take me a while, even days sometimes, to decide what exactly I want to do. And don't forget to track the time. One of the standard mediation responsibilities in a consensus, and again in a couple, they both would take it if you're reaching a consensus with yourself on an internal conflict, still it makes sense for you to ask, how much time do I have to process this right now? When does the decision have to be made by, like in the case of someone offering me a cookie, I might only have a few seconds to decide. But in the case of, I don't know, where do I bank? I might have months to decide. So asking, how much time do we have? What do we do if we run out of time? Understand that time management is part of good mediation. One final note, sometimes the use of committee is part of a consensus decision, or sometimes doing further data research is part of consensus. So it doesn't mean you have to come up with the final answer to an issue at the time. Sometimes a subgroup will go out and come back with a proposal for the main group. Or in a dad consensus, sometimes say the husband will say, I'll go find out information about A, B, and C. I'll come back so we can table this for now and we will re-meet to decide it later. Finally, sometimes there are subscripts or what we call hidden agendas. So when someone's sharing their world about an item, listen to their tone of voice, watch their face and their body language. If there seems to be another issue involved under the surface, sometimes that piece of information is valuable in developing a consensus decision proposal. And sometimes it's almost can be treated as a separate item and say, gee, if those feelings or perceptions don't get dealt with, it's going to be hard to find a solution that works about this question. So if you're mediating or in a dyad consensus where both people are mediating, listen for those things. I know it makes things complicated, but complicated is who we are as molecular computers and as a soul that we share. So when you hear a possible subscript or a hidden agenda, remember the other person knows themselves better than you do. So if you share a perception check, which is different than a simple reflection and includes sometimes subscripts or hidden agendas, let them be the judge in the conversation of how much that's going to be part of what you're doing and part of the current consensus. You do the best you can. None of us is perfect at mediating. None of us is perfect at sharing. We're just human. So remember, please send questions or comments to Zach@kepw.org. And also visit the website for podcasts of all the installments and for other books and materials that can help you integrate or internalize this system we call effective humanistic intervention training. It takes time and there's a lot to it. But when you think about human communication and how complicated it is, remember we're hooking up two or more trillion cell molecular computers and trying, who each have different perceptions and worlds, and trying to get, some harmonic functioning going on the stage that we share. Not simple, lots of variables, as they say in The Great Lebowski, as I remember it. Lots of variables, dude, things to consider, ups and downs, ins and outs. It's complicated, but don't let that stop you from learning the material and joining us next Monday for installment number 11 of The Art of Relating. Have a great week.